Good afternoon. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Sunday, March the 20th, 2022. And this is sort of a special podcast in the sense that it's actually a discussion at the request of Keith Redman, where we are going to talk about renunciation. And people can sort of listen in. This will be largely guided by Keith's reasons, I think, for requesting this. And so Keith is here, and it's also very good news that Karen Alpert from Australia is joining us as well. And the general theme of this is, I think Shakespeare said it, to be or not to be, whether 'tis better. And today we will say to renounce or not to renounce, whether 'tis better. And as you know, or at least I think I know, my mother was a high school English teacher. I think that to be or not to be was in contemplation of suicide, and to renounce or not to renounce is in contemplation of suicide. So Keith, what was it that brought us together today? What was going on in your life, in your head?
Well, it got me thinking. I, you know, have worked with a number of people and giving, you know, some a bit of guidance and so forth with people, American immigrants, and that's with an E, in particular, who are in a major quandary on whether to renounce or not. And a growing number of them are kind of, I don't know what the right word is, stuck, but they don't want to renounce, but they want to have all the benefits of not having U.S. citizenship. For example, investing maybe into a particular retirement product or financial product that's tax deferred in their country of residence, or starting a business in their country of residence, which are all normal things and good things to do. But with the U.S. citizenship, there's a major hindrance. In other words, not being able to do that appropriately or properly. But they want to keep their U.S. citizenship because maybe one day one of their children might possibly, if the stars are aligned, move to the U.S. to get a job. And if they like the job, they'll stay, or they may meet an American guy or gal and get married and maybe go to the U.S. to have kids. So, you know, I realize that this has come up more and more. And what I say to each of them is that, in a nice way, you know, you really can't have your cake and eat it too. If you want to maintain your U.S. citizenship, and that's, you know, certainly one's prerogative, emotionally, financially, whatever the case may be, you have to realize what you are going to sacrifice in present terms and also in future terms. That goes for if you are renouncing. You have to take a look at what you are, you know, gaining, as well as what you're sacrificing in the present and in the future. So it's kind of a question of taking a look at what is the future value of retaining your U.S. citizenship or renouncing your U.S. citizenship. What is the difference? So I thought it would be a good idea, especially with you, John, just because you deal with this all the time, obviously in much greater detail than I am, because you're a lawyer, I am not. And also Karen, she's got a good financial background, as well as she has renounced herself. And I think this could maybe be of a help to American immigrants. And I specifically say that versus accidental Americans, only because for the most part, accidental Americans don't have that same emotional tie to the U.S. that really stops them. They're very much not they're not an American. They really are not. They really are not. So, voila, that's kind of what has stopped
them. They have sued the State Department, all right, over the renunciation issue.
Yeah, they sued the State Department.
You know, of great significance, I think, you know.
Oh, I agree. Don't get me wrong, I'm not dismissing the egregiousness of what has happened to them at all, but I don't think they have the same back and forth in their head that an American immigrant, meaning someone who's living permanently outside the U.S., has when it comes to the renunciation aspect. Well, that's just from my experience.
American, it's an identity issue, right? They don't identify as American.
Right, exactly. So, yeah. That's kind of the premise. I'd like to kind of have a discussion with you guys on, you know, what's the best way to proceed if you're contemplating renouncing.
Okay.
Not from a procedural standpoint, but just from a knowing the sacrifices and the benefits.
It's really sad that there are so many disadvantages to being an American citizen.
I know. Outside the U.S., absolutely.
Well, actually, maybe even inside the U.S.
Yeah.
Citizens better there, too.
So maybe... No, go ahead, please.
It is interesting that U.S. citizenship is probably the only citizenship in the world that's worth renouncing. I mean, I can't think of any other citizenship where, you know, people feel they want to renounce it. They have to renounce it.
And they want so bad that they're willing to spend $2,350 minimum.
Oh, that's right. That's the administrative fee to the State Department. People are paying that. That's about as well. That is as cheap as it gets.
Yeah. Well, that's the minimum. You know, if you're going to be U.S. tax compliant and you haven't been in the system, you got to take care of, you have to take care of the filings, and usually using a CPA or a tax attorney. So that is the bare minimum.
Well, okay. So to be clear on that point, right?
So that's the procedural aspect.
So there is absolutely no requirement of tax compliance in order to renounce.
Exactly.
I think that's important for people to understand. But there are negative tax issues triggered if you renounce without being tax compliant, specifically if you become a covered expatriate and therefore, you know, the whole exit tax regime kicks in, which may not actually affect people at all, right? Because, I mean, to say
exactly
that exit tax applies doesn't mean that people owe an exit tax, but certainly those with pensions, I'd be very, very careful. But, you know, the other problem would be the whole, making gifts or bequests to U.S. citizens down the road if you're a covered expatriate, right, particularly children. And that's why, you may or may not know, but the second consequence of being a covered expatriate is that normally in the U.S., gift or bequest is not taxable to the recipient. But if it comes from a covered expatriate, then it's, like a 40% tax under the current rules.
Right.
And, I would say that's a pretty significant asset confiscation.
But John, this is kind of a discussion, so there's going to be back and forth here. But that also depends on the individual situation when it comes to that. So I always use France as an example. So you have somebody in France who did not, an American immigrant in France who's also French, because that's how it will happen, is that they renounce. They're not in the U.S. tax system. That's what they chose. And they move forward, and their kids live in France. They have nothing to do with the U.S. So if they give something to the kids, how is the U.S. get their fingers involved in that when they're not even, they haven't been in the U.S. tax system for 20, 25 years? There's a lot of factors involved, wouldn't you say?
I think there's a lot of factors including the practicality of the situation, which you're alluding to. I'm just saying that regardless of what somebody actually does, I think it's critical that they understand what the law says, with respect.
Oh, absolutely. To know what the risks are. Yeah, I agree.
It seems to me that most of the people renouncing, and interesting Karen's feelings, I think most of the people renouncing either are or feel that they can create a situation where they're not covered as patriots, below the 2 million thing. That's generally my perception of this. I don't know. What do you think, Karen?
Yeah, I think probably most. There will be a few who can't, but I think most of the people I talk to, they're like, 2 million? I'm nowhere near 2 million.
Right.
I just don't want to have to file anymore. I want to open a business, whatever. Actually, from the Australians, I hear, they want my super? Are you kidding? Yeah. They can't touch my super.
Well, the superannuation thing is a very, very strong reason for people in Australia to renounce.
Absolutely.
And what would you, just for people who maybe are not familiar with it, don't live in Australia, would you say that the superannuation, the equivalent would be like a pension scheme through the state?
That's, superannuation is essentially like a 401k in terms of, you know, your employer makes contributions and you can top it up a bit if you want. And then when you retire, you take money out. And the way it's taxed in Australia is completely different from the way the US taxes a 401k. So in terms of what you see on your individual return, you pay no taxes as the money goes in Australia, but the fund, when it receives it, pays tax. They pay tax at a reduced rate. And they pay tax on the income inside of it at a reduced rate, but it's paid at the fund level, not the individual level. So it doesn't generally show up as a credit on the individual return. And then when the individual receives the money out, current Australian law is if you withdraw after age 60, it's completely tax-free.
Yeah.
And so that's the point where the US starts looking at it and saying, wait a minute, you haven't paid any tax on this. Or you've included deposits, the initial deposits in your taxable income, but nobody's paid tax on the appreciation, no US tax. So therefore, those withdrawals become taxable with no foreign tax credit to offset it, because Australia's not making you pay taxes, but the US is completely ignoring all of the tax paid inside by the fund.
Right.
So you are being double taxed. The whole thing is just a mess.
So was that the catalyst for you being proactive to renounce when you did, because you saw what the future value was of you renouncing?
That was part of it. That was certainly a very large part of it, because I'm looking at, I renounced 6 years ago now in 2016, saying, I'm going to be retiring at some point. And I have since retired. And I am so glad that I don't have to try and figure out how much of that super that I'm pulling out to live off of now, how much of that is taxable by the US and how much isn't. I'm not paying any tax on it in Australia.
And that's the benefit of you renouncing from a really serious financial standpoint, is you don't have to go through this whole minutia of dealing with the US tax declaration and try to figure out and paying for a tax compliance professional to do it and so forth.
That's right. That's part of it. And it also meant that I could plan. So, there's a lot of rules in Australia that they're really trying to encourage the use of superannuation, because if you have enough in superannuation to live off of, then you don't qualify for the age pension, which is
state.
You kind of think of it as our Social Security equivalent, right?
But
that's paid by the government, and it's means tested.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an assets test and an incomes test. But if you've got enough assets to generate enough income to live off of, you're going to get less or no age pension. So the government wants to encourage people to save enough to live off of themselves so that they don't need to rely on the government once they've retired.
Right. So did you, to play off the term cost benefit analysis, did you do a sacrifice benefit analysis when you were going through the process of thinking about renouncing?
I formally listed pros and cons or anything, but I certainly considered the fact that I can't just, waltz back to the US anytime I want. I have to follow all the rules that an Australian would have to follow. So I can go for 90 days on an ESTA, and that's it, 90 days. So I've got a mother who's in her mid 80s. And that's a consideration. If something happened to her, I would have to, I could only go for 90 days at a time.
Right. And you would leave and then come back for another 90 days.
I could leave and then come back. I would want to also, I mean, the whole reason we did this, right, was to avoid U.S. taxes. So I would want to also make sure I avoided becoming a U.S. tax resident. So I wouldn't want to stay very long. You know, I wouldn't want to trip the substantial presence test or anything like that. Right. But yeah, that certainly was one of the considerations. At the time I renounced, one of my children, my son was living in the U.S. He's still living in the U.S., but that's limited duration now. He's moving back to Australia soon.
At the
time I didn't know. Yeah. No, they've only recently decided to move back to Australia. So, there was the possibility that I might at some point in the future have grandchildren or something over there.
Yeah.
But, I figured I could work around it with the, short visits. So 90 days is a fairly substantial visit. So I'm not, for me personally, that wasn't a big downside. I mean, certainly a downside, but not huge. Mm-hmm. With regard to my mother, I have siblings who live real close to her.
So, all those are factors.
That's a factor because not the only one I'm not the only child. I'm not the only one she would be relying on should she need care. We could split it up between my siblings and I could spend 90 days there at a time, right?
Yeah.
So
that's good. And I think, John, I think people need to really, tell me what you think. I mean, people really need to take a look at what their future is going to be from a financial standpoint as well. If they're living in the UK and Australia and France or Germany or wherever, and they're saving for retirement, they need to see what that's going to look like if they maintain their U.S. citizenship.
Yeah. If they're going to be relying on U.S. Social Security or for their retirement income, that might tip the balance in the other direction.
Oh, I agree.
In Australia, if you're no longer a U.S. citizen, then they're going to be withholding from your Social Security. So that's
right. Which could be a good thing, or it might be you're not getting much from Social Security because you left the U.S. so long ago. It might not be a bad thing. You see what I mean?
It's something you have to weigh. I mean,
right.
I worked in the U.S. long enough to get Social Security, but not much.
Right.
And the bulk of my retirement savings is in Australia.
Right. Please.
Go ahead, Keith.
I was going to say, at the risk of just real quickly going off on a tangent, and then we'll come right back, is that I know some countries like France, for example, they have an agreement, and I don't, to be honest with you, I don't know if it's in the treaty formally, but they have an agreement with the Social Security in the U.S. that you can apply credits towards your French equivalent of Social Security when you retire.
There's 14, 15 countries that have Social Security agreements with the U.S., John?
Exactly.
I think it's 26 totalization.
Okay.
Is it fall under the totalization agreements?
Yeah, that's
it. Okay,
so
thank you.
That particular thing you're talking about, the ability to credit work in one country towards social
security. But then some countries have treaties that say the U.S. can tax the Social Security, and some have treaties that say that only the country they're living in can tax the Social Security. So,
right.
You have to look carefully at where you're living and what the treaty is. You do a quick pro forma. What's your tax situation going to look like if you're not a U.S. citizen?
Exactly.
Your total tax situation. I mean, we're sitting here talking about Social Security, but that's one aspect of source income, right?
I think
to put it more generally, a very, very important question to ask if one is renouncing is, what is your financial relationship with the United States?
Yep.
because if you have a lot of us, I think Karen and I did a series of podcasts on this a couple of years ago, where we talked about different kinds of income streams. But, you know, you've got to know how those income streams from the United States are going to be taxed. And there's a second thing that I rarely hear any consciousness of at all. But that is that the U.S. has a really, really brutal estate tax regime as it's applied to non-resident aliens, right? So I mean, if you're selling a lot of U.S. assets, you know, U.S. assets of, you know, real estate, et cetera, of over $60,000 would subject you to a massive, massive estate tax, right? And so, you know, if you remain an American citizen, under the current rules, I think it's 11 million. It's going down to 5, right? But you know, whether it's 11, whether it's 3, shockingly, that $60,000 figure has not changed at all in many, many
years. Right. Absolutely. And that's certainly something that we're conscious of.
And it needs to be taken into consideration when you're contemplating renouncing or not renouncing.
Well, you know, I think we need very simple and very clear on this. And I'm sure Karen would agree with this way of putting it. Okay. You have to understand what your financial relationship will be with the United States once you renounce. You know,
that, and may I,
you get screen from the United States. Do you own assets in the United States? How might the treaty affect the taxation of those kinds of things? If you have, say, a large apartment building or something, some kind of, you know, piece of real estate in the United States, you know, you want to ask yourself, is there a state tax treaty? I believe that things like 401ks and that are U.S. situs assets for the purposes of the estate tax. You know, so this for a lot of people is a really, really big deal. And I listen to people talk about renunciation and, you know, and they don't talk about the things that I think really matter. You know, I think that, first of all, I never really understood what the word decision meant until I started doing this kind of stuff. And most people approach a decision as though it's a mathematical puzzle where, you know, you can figure it out. And, oh, I figured it out. You know, I'm better off renouncing or not. Those are not decisions, okay? Because, anything that can be calculated to perfection is not a decision. You just figure out how to calculate. A decision is when it's not clear one way or the other, and you have to ask yourself, well, you know, which set of consequences am I more comfortable living with? Now, one of the
things exactly
that, you know, Karen mentioned, you and Karen were talking about, but I'd like to put a little more generally is this. After you renounce, you're treated as a citizen of whatever country you're a citizen of, and how does that relate to concerns you have perhaps about entering the United States? So I live in Canada, and you know, I think the Canadians who renounce U.S. citizenship are giving up, frankly, nothing. Yeah. You know, because you can enter the United States with just a passport. That's it. And most of them, you know, many of them, not most. I mean, there's this culture of these snowbirds who will stay there, you know, 4 or 5 months of the year. You know, they're giving up, well, they're giving up something, but they're giving up much less than, say, Karen's situation in Australia, because I accept what you're telling me. You can go there for 90 days. You know, you need an ESTA and that sort of thing. I mean, there's a little more work there. So, you know, Australia is a visa waiver country. You know,
And the visa waiver is not difficult to
complete. No, it's not difficult.
No.
But it doesn't have the same ease of access that, say, Canadian citizens.
Right, absolutely.
Right.
Down to, you know, I mean, if you were a dual Iranian American citizen, it would seem to me that if you renounce U.S. citizenship, you're giving up much more.
Exactly. That needs to be taken into consideration.
So I think, as we talk about general factors to identify, which is, you know, you use the factors to make the decision, right? I mean, the first factor is, well, are you a covered expatriate? And I think what I'd like to add to Karen's thoughts there is that I think a lot of people will renounce because they're afraid of becoming a covered expatriate.
Right.
They want to preserve their right to renounce, you know, that's the first thing. Are you or are you not a covered expatriate? Right. You know, what that might mean. Two, what are you left with in terms of a citizenship? Okay. You know, is that a factor? Yes or no? All right. And you know, the world is, one of the things the last couple of years have done is, I think, increase the value of multiple citizenships, you know, the whole COVID thing, you know, et cetera. And the third is, what's your financial relationship with the United States? And these are things that people do not consider, interestingly.
May I add just one aspect on that, John, and tell me, you and Karen, what you agree on? I like what you said. What is your financial relationship with the U.S.? But would you agree, what another one would be, what do you want your financial relationship to be where you live in the U.K. and in France, as far as saving, as far as opening a business? So yeah, I think it has to be both.
Of course that's a factor. Of course that's a factor.
Yeah. So and another factor to consider is, do you expect in the future to receive U.S. assets by way of inheritance?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and if that's just going to be cash, that's not a big deal. But if your parents own a huge business that you're going to get, you know, multi-million dollars worth of shares of.
Yeah, or property or something.
Yeah, or an apartment building or whatever.
Yeah.
That cut both ways, because and I can't quote the, you know, the various treaties here, but there are treaties that have provisions that allow inheritance of U.S. assets to American citizens, you know, to not be subject to various local, you know.
France is one of them. Yeah.
Right. But the other thing I'm thinking is, then once you've inherited that apartment building or whatever, you now have this huge U.S. asset.
Yeah.
And if you were a covered expatriate, that could be a problem when you subsequently pass it on to your heirs.
Yeah, it makes you. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it makes you a covered expatriate. And, you know, the good news is that you're inheriting the basis of the fair market value under the parents. Or so, you know, if you're.
Well, you are for U.S. tax purposes, not necessarily.
Right. That's right.
For your local tax purposes, because Australia doesn't allow that.
No question about it. You know, all of which is to say, so far in the discussion, that, you know, there's a sense out there that, you know, renunciation is nothing but some kind of an immigration decision. It's easy to do. You pay your $2,350. I've got to say that I think that is a very, very bad way to think about this.
And I'm going to be devil's advocate, John, just intentionally. Would you agree that for some, that's all they need to do?
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay.
You know, and these are the people, but these are not the people we're talking about, the immigrants.
Correct. Okay? Correct.
You know, these are the people who are, you know, accidentals who are not in the U.S. tax system.
Right.
You know, et cetera. And, you know, because they're accidentals, perhaps have never filed. Of course, I would agree.
And then there are Americans who live outside the U.S. who have never been in the U.S. tax system. They would probably fall under the same boat, in the same boat.
Well, I think that they're maybe more likely to have inheritance issues and assets. I mean,
possibly, yeah.
Okay. All we're doing is identifying, you know, a universe of different factors. They may apply to some people, they may not apply to others. But I'm going to repeat that the culture of discussion of this stuff, mm-hmm. I think, severely diminishes and underrates the, you know, and does not acknowledge the factors that affect a lot of people, and, you know, which they may very well regret
mm-hmm.
down the road. I mean, my personal view of this is, for what it's worth, is that those who can renounce easily are not covered expatriates, and basically by just filing those returns, a one-off thing, you know, this provision, which doesn't cost that much money, I think that if they can get out by the book and put this, you know, to rest for all time, I think they probably should.
Right.
Once, you know, there, you know, that's an easy group of people. And it's interesting to me that the, you know, you talk about, well, you know, there's this whole bunch of people out there who probably should just renounce and do nothing. Yeah. I mean, I think they probably can. Whether they should, I think, is probably question number two, right? Because what they have done, you know, if they go through the whole thing, for example, using the relief procedures or something, is, you know, they put out all the fires, you know, for all time. And, you know.
Right. And I think it's important that they also have the, and I'm, I'm saying this intentionally because I've been shocked on this, that there is that new relief procedure for certain Americans that you do after you renounce that came out in September of 2019. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that there are a number of U.S. tax compliance professionals that know nothing about it.
I hear nothing at all. In fact, I argue, with clients I work with, you know, that this is the way to do this and not the other way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, so, that's just, you know, in life, peoples are creatures of habit. And, you know,
yeah. No. So I think the one thing we haven't touched on. So, you know, listening to this discussion so far, you'd think that the decision is almost exclusively financial. But for which it's not. Right.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, especially those who grew up in the U.S., they have an American identity, and they feel like they are turning their back on that, feel unpatriotic or whatever. And so that's something you really have to grapple with. But I don't think you have to hold a U.S. passport to feel American.
Yeah. Did you grapple with it, Karen? Did you grapple with that?
Not so much, a little bit, but I know a lot of people who do, you know, they talk to me and they go, I could never renounce. What would my mother think? Or, you know, I'm too much of an American. And people always still identify me as American. The accent's not going away. Sorry, Chris.
Right.
And and that's where I grew up. That's fine. It's just not the nationality I hold anymore.
Right.
Yeah, I think that Karen's absolutely right on that. I think that citizenship is more of an identity. I mean, that's all it is, really. Right. At its core, mm-hmm. You know, an identity issue, and citizenship is for people part of who you are. I think that in renouncing U.S. citizenship, I don't think it affects who you are. I don't think it affects, you know, your identification with being American. I think what it does is simply breaks the regulatory tie, you know, the problem.
Right.
It's giving you trouble down the road. But
for many, it is a very emotional issue.
Yeah, exactly. It's sure.
And that we need to acknowledge that.
Absolutely.
It is. It is. I've had people on the phone crying with me because they know they have to do it, but they don't want to do it. But they know for the benefit of themselves in the future and their family, they have to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's tough. I appreciate that.
What's going on here is these are forced renunciations, right?
Right. People, right.
Why would anybody go to the trouble of renouncing, paying all this money, you know, and that? Unless they really felt they had to. There are very few. I mean, all these years, I can only think of one or two instances where I've helped people expatriate because they felt strongly about not wanting to be in America. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is generated by very practical problems because the cost of U.S. citizenship is very high.
Mm-hmm.
And it also is becoming increasingly clear that you know, America is not the country that, you know, people were taught it is when they grew up there. You know, Americans certainly do not have more freedoms than citizens of other countries. I think probably in many ways they have less. I don't think that the U.S. has a generally higher standard of living. You know, I mean.
And you learn that after living outside the United States. That's the funny part or the ironic part, you know.
Well, you know, U.S. culture is a very, very closed culture. You know, it's not an outward-looking country. You know, as a general principle, you know, I mean, the conditioning starts very young there. You know, the Pledge of Allegiance, I mean, Who else does this? You know, I mean, I grew up, well, you know, the time that I grew up, I mean, it was like the center of the world sort of thing. I mean, you actually, I don't think you were fed these images directly, but the reasonable inferences from the images that you were fed were the rest of the world was some backward place. Canada probably didn't have electricity.
And everybody's willing, wants to come into the United States, everyone all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, which is, absolutely incorrect, but I understand that aspect of American culture. And I also understand that that's absolutely true, that the, you know, the part of the conditioning is that as an American, it is part of your identity and that you're somehow, you know, there's some exclusivity, you know, associated with that, right? I mean, it's sort of like, you know, the horrible emotional decision of whether to get rid of an American Express Platinum card, you know, even though you never use it. You know, just, oh my God, holy Jesus, oh my platinum. But
I had gotten rid of mine, so I understand. I laughed because, yeah, I understand that one.
But it's very much tied into identity. There's absolutely
no,
you know, that's what citizenship largely is. I mean, people say, you know, it's fascinating. I went to a Canadian citizenship ceremony a couple of years ago. A friend of mine's mother, believe it or not, in her 80s, whatever, was becoming a Canadian citizen. And, you know, it was a hugely emotional day, you know, for all the people who were at that ceremony that day. I mean, it was hugely emotional. You know, the sense of, you know, formally being recognized, you know, as part of, you know, a great nation. I think Canada probably is a great nation, but I mean, you know,
it's a big deal.
Nation is a great nation, you know, sort of thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's no doubt that it's emotional. And it was interesting because we went out for lunch after, and you know, the daughter had also naturalized, you know, years earlier as a Canadian. And I asked her, I said, you know, how'd you feel about the day? And, you know, did you feel proud? And she said, yeah, you know, I felt so proud. I mean, not only for myself, but, you know, for my mother, et cetera. And this is, so citizenship is, you know, is a huge, huge thing. I mean, even in Canada where, you know, you don't have, I don't think as much of life is tied into specifically being a U.S. citizen.
Right.
But I don't know how to get around that other than,
well,
nothing stops you from identifying as being an American. And actually, maybe another way of viewing it, isn't expatriation, you know, one of the most American things you can do?
And some, and the ironic part of it is, for many people, it's buying their freedom. That's what's so unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, it clearly so, is buying their freedom.
Yeah. So to kind of come, you know, at the risk of sounding trite, but to kind of come full circle, what would you say, for someone who is contemplating renouncing, and they're going through the back and forth in their head, you know, for me, I tell them to write things down. Things in black and white make better sense and clarity, and to gather as much information as possible on your, you know, like you said, John, what is your relationship with the United States? And what do you want your relationship to be in the country of residence where you are moving forward? Are you looking to open up a business? Well, then that's going to be a factor in making a decision on maybe to renounce. So there's a lot of investigating and research.
That, Keith, that phrase, opening a business, let me work on that a little bit. I think it depends on the form of the business that you're going to open.
Sure. I was using that generally.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we're talking about, but I think this is important, right? I mean, if we're talking about things that either meet the test of corporations under U.S. law or whatever, you know, I think.
Well, there's also, can I interrupt for a second? And you can educate me if I'm mistaken on this one. Isn't it also one has to take a look at if there's a totalization agreement with the country you're in or not? Because even just opening up the equivalent of a LLC or a sole proprietorship, that could have major consequences if there's no totalization agreement.
You mean in terms of employment tax or something? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah, of course you have to see if there's a totalization agreement. If there's a totalization agreement, there's no self-employment tax, right?
Right.
You know, and this is one of the, you know, I think what perhaps could be added here is, you know, we talk about this in generalities, but the reality is it's a separate conversation for every country. All right. and a separate conversation for every person within that every country, right? Because, you know, of all of these, you know, all of these factors. So, you know, Australia, for example, is a country where I think it's probably most difficult to be a U.S. citizen because of the, you know, the absurd treaty. Israel, you know, there's huge problems there, you know, because of the self-employment tax issue, right? There is no totalization agreement. You know, so it's very difficult to be self-employed, you know, in Israel.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's all over the place. It really is. And, you know, and I would say also, okay, that, so some factors, okay, I think we should distinguish between the things you think about versus how you make a decision here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But let's start with things that we identify as factors. And we've talked about this stuff. I mean, the financial relationship to the United States, after you renounce, your immigration status vis-a-vis the United States, after you renounce, I mean, this is information acquisition. Okay, you know, and then the work of making the decision, whatever that means, begins to take place. And if you haven't identified those background pieces of things we know, so to speak, right, then you shouldn't
right.
be trying to decide whether to renounce, because you're not even ready to do that, because you just don't have, you know, an understanding, you know, of some of the basic factors. So once you've got that, then I think you move into, you know, now I'm going to decide this. Now, that is, decisions are not right or wrong. A decision, I think, is on balance, I think I prefer to deal with this set of circumstances than that set of circumstances. Okay, down the road.
Exactly.
All right, I think that's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you're going to incorporate, you know, the impact of, you know, the finances and that sort of thing. And I think you have a good, honest discussion with yourself about what does the U.S. citizenship really mean in terms of my identity? And tempered with, well, can't I still be a U.S. citizen at heart, you know, if I break this, you know, this sort of legal bond, if you will? And I think for those who are married to non-citizen spouses, I think that can mean different things in different contexts, right, in different countries. But, you know, it would seem to me that where there's a tension between consideration of your immediate family and your citizenship, I mean, I would hope that people prioritize the family and, you know, and not mm-hmm. citizenship thing. But
anyway, sure.
You know, that's sort of, you know, I think how you have this kind of conversation with somebody. But I think what's really critical here, Keith, is that I'm sure that setting up this conversation, you know, you're looking for an answer, and there isn't one.
Well, no, there isn't no set answer. It just, every situation is going to be different.
Well, and you know, it's not, you know, you're not renouncing with 100% conviction that, you know, yeah, this is what I want to do. You know, you're renouncing with the conviction that, you know, I've done the best I can. I think I've identified the factors that matter here.
Yeah.
And nobody can know the future. But what I do know right now, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is that U.S. citizenship is causing me difficulty in mapping out the future that I want for myself. So the question is simply this. Do I really want to, by keeping U.S. citizenship, essentially make the decision that I can't have the kind of life for myself and my family that I want down the road? And then, so you go through that. And then the last thing I would say to them as they're getting up to leave, say, oh, you know, you never told me. When was the last time you were in the United States?
Yeah.
All right. And if they look at you and say, well, it's been 5 years, you know, that's interesting.
Right.
Right. You know, that's interesting because people are habitual creatures. And, you know, if you're not spending much time there, I think that that significantly diminishes the sort of abstract, theoretical, philosophical, does U.S. citizenship have value? Because it doesn't seem to have much value to you. you know, if you're not going there, et cetera. But I mean, those are just sort of snapshots of the kinds of, you know, conversations that I have with people. Although I would say this, by the time people call me, it's usually they've made the decision they want out, you know, and they want to analyze stuff. Not too many people call me up, you know, just to, you know, talk about U.S. citizenship. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Do they read my blogs? I think they know what I think, you know. I mean, I think U.S. Right. citizenship has value. I really do. But the problem yeah. is the cost of keeping it is so outrageously high.
Well, it has a lot of value if you want to live in the U.S.
Absolutely.
That's right. But we're talking about immigrants here.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But, yeah.
You know, of course, no. the accidentals. Well, you know, I wouldn't go so far as to say it has no value for the accidentals.
No, I'm not saying that there's no value to them, but generally speaking, they don't have the same tie, even financially and emotionally, as an American immigrant would.
Right.
So it's a little bit different for
you
them.
Know what I think we ought to add to the discussion here. Age matters in this hugely, okay?
Yes, it does.
Because U.S. citizenship has option value, and the option value increases with the amount of time that it's there. So if you're in your 20s, you know, you might very well get a job offer in the U.S. or whatever, and having the U.S. citizenship is going to matter.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're
probably not in a financial situation where it's really hurting you, right? Where U.S. citizenship hurts you.
Good point.
Is when you try to transition from base salary to saving and investing for retirement or trying to live off financial assets. That's where it hurts you. But, you know, I would agree that for younger people, you know, it has the most value because the cost of, you know, partly for the reasons that Karen's giving, you know, job opportunities, but also because of the usual reality that the financial situation is very simple. You know, you've got a salary, you just, whatever, you know, no big deal. But that type of person, you know, if they really do, or if they really are holding it because they think that there's value to it, that may be an argument to get in the taxes.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I know that, you know, Keith, that you're adamant on not getting into the, you know, but I mean,
No. No, I'm not adamant, you know, but there's certain
very contextual sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, then
there's certain circumstances.
Yeah, and then you move on to people, you know, I don't know, late 30s, early 40s, and you know, I think it's reasonable for people in that range to renounce, depending on what they're doing in their lives. For example, I don't know, I've had a lot of clients that sort of fit this profile. American citizen, doctor, living in Canada, married to, you know, a Canadian, some sort of professional license, right? You know, and, you know, accountant, lawyer, whatever, you know, working there. So first of all, you know, these people are well established in Canada. Secondly, these kinds of professional licenses are not easily transferable. I mean, they can be transferred, okay, but it's not like, you know, calling up and just saying, you know, I'm going to open a medical practice or something. So, yeah. You know, those types of people, I think U.S. citizenship has less value. I mean, the more that your livelihood is dependent on a license that not, is not quite as transferable, right?
Right.
You know, I think probably the stronger the case for getting out. And then the people who are 50 plus, you know, I have talked to very few people 50 plus where I think they should remain, you know, where if they've got it in their head that this is a problem for them, that, you know, they should keep it. Because yeah. the chances of their going anywhere are remote. And remember that if somebody like that moves to the U.S., and this is something that Karen and I need to do a podcast on, right? You know, you talk about moving to the U.S. and you move to the U.S. with assets that are non-U.S. assets, right?
Yeah.
And all the horror that brings with it, right?
You mean moving to the U.S. as an American going to the U.S.?
Yes, because yeah. you have assets in Canada, yeah. the U.K., these are all
right.
foreign assets.
Yeah.
You know, that you've got to live with and all the horrors of that. So,
right.
you know, I really don't think that, you know, these people who sit around, well, maybe I'll move to the U.S. I don't think they're being realistic.
Well, they don't know. They don't know what they don't
know. That's right. They don't know. Yeah. But I mean, you know, life is full of rude awakenings and this stuff is a big problem. I mean, I can't tell yeah. you. I wouldn't laugh how many panicked people I've talked to over the years going out of their minds who moved to the U.S. and just found out about all the foreign asset reporting rules and stuff, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
You know, they don't know.
I mean, I get it from Australians all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
I got a green card and moved to the U.S. and now they want to touch my super.
Right.
Right.
And that will be another podcast.
Yep. Well, it definitely is. But the point that I'm making in the context of what we're talking about, which is the decision whether to keep U.S. citizenship.
Right.
One of the problems, right, if you're 20, you're not likely to have a lot of assets, right? So it's an easy transition. But let's say you're in your 40s, and yeah, you have the right to go to the U.S., but you also, may very well have significant non-U.S. assets and things like that, that, can, be problematic down the road in the United States. So there's that. I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is that I understand theoretically that with U.S. citizens, and then there's the healthcare issue, right? How do you get the healthcare? Theoretically, one can say, well, I could move to the U.S., practically forget it. Okay, once your life is established outside the United States, it's not going to work for you without a lot of expensive planning, probably divesting yourself of existing assets, depending on your circumstances. And for what? Exactly. At least, that's my sense of it. So,
I think it would be a good point to kind of wrap up for people who are kind of on the fence trying to decide what to do. I think this is a lot of information that they need to do their due diligence to really get a good grasp on whether.
Well, let me wrap up by summarizing. Step one, I think that Karen and I have identified a lot of, informational components that, you've mm-hmm. got to get, right?
Absolutely.
About this, and you can get that. What I think most people are going to need, a certain amount of professional help to get that stuff accurately. And then, you've got to decide, all right, given that information, which way do I feel better down the road, recognizing that, it could blow up in your face. The world can change. I mean, we're now, who would have imagined a month ago that, we'd be living in a world where Russia had invaded Ukraine, whatever, or from their point of view, gone in to save it. But, there are major, major events in the world that, that can change things, and we have no control over those. So
no, we don't.
Yeah, I would close is the way I used to teach when I was teaching stuff. And mm-hmm. One of the pieces of advice I would give an exam taking was this: focus on what you do know first, and don't get into what you don't know, the uncertain, until you really, got a clear idea of what you do know for sure. So start with figuring out the financial relationship, that then once you've got that down, then you're getting into more of a combination of thinking and feeling. Okay. And coming mm-hmm. to some center of gravity that you can live with, but you're not going to go in and renounce with 100% conviction. That's not happening. Yeah, for no other reason, but you have to give them $2,350 at that
point. Yeah. And no matter what you decide, there's going to be a sacrifice. I think people need to realize that.
No matter what you decide, you're going to feel that you're giving something up. In reality, I think many people are giving up nothing. I mean, my personal view is that people are better off being in the United States as a Canadian than as an American. But, again, the situation with Canada is, I think, a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my summary. What's your summary, Karen?
Yeah, I think you just have to go through the process. And it's a process. It's not, you're not going to come to a decision overnight. You got to go through the process of laying out what things are going to look like each way, how you're going to, the different factors that you think are going to affect how you feel about it each way. And then, my process when making a difficult decision is to kind of get that all down on paper or someplace.
Yes.
And then live with it for a week or so. Just let it percolate in the back of my mind. And by the end of that, usually I can say, yes, I feel comfortable going one way or the other.
Or I feel more comfortable with one.
Yeah, more comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's never.
It's not easy. No.
No, it's not easy.
No.
And it's, well,
it's not easy, but it becomes much harder if people impose the wrong standard on what it means to make a decision.
Sure.
And they don't look at the things that, you know, sort of the factual things they need to know. And, you know, again, decision does not mean that we're going to figure this out with some kind of certainty. Decision means I've looked at all the information that I can get objectively. I've thought carefully about the kind of person I am. I've thought about how my U.S. citizenship impacts my family, you know, where I'm living. And based on all three of these things, although anything in life can always blow up, all right, and I might regret it, I'm reasonably confident that I would prefer to live with circumstance A, renouncing, or circumstance B, retaining. I mean, I think that's basically what you need to do.
Absolutely. No, I think this has been a good, I feel it's been a good discussion, and I think it'll be good for those, and Lord knows there are many out there who are in the midst of trying to decide what to do and feel a little bit lost. So I think this can be a good thing for them.
Yeah. There's also, so we'll put this out as a podcast. I did a video about a month or so ago with, I think, Frost Tax Law, which is a more technical sort of thing. Give you the URL. You know what? I'll put that in the podcast, that as well.
But, yeah, put that in notes.
Yeah, but you know, Karen, we've got to, we really have got to do this podcast discussion on called The Coming to America, you know, with these foreign, oh my God. I mean, this is just, but it's not just America, it's Canada too. It's the whole issue of, you know, moving from one country to another with existing assets that's so problematic.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, what do you think, Keith? To renounce or not to renounce?
Or not to renounce. That is the question.
Whether it is to live with the burdens, the pain, the agony,
yeah,
the uncertainty, the oppressiveness, confiscatory nature of U.S. citizenship.
And I have to say, as we're melding Shakespeare into this, I think along with what we were speaking about before, what is that line from Romeo and Juliet? A rose is a rose by any other name. It's a rose, meaning you're American, whether you have that U.S. passport or not. You know what I mean? So we can always find those analogies with Shakespeare.
Yeah, and actually, one more line from Shakespeare that we probably should close with is kill all the lawyers. And I would add the accounts.
Well, both of you, I thank you for the opportunity to speak on this. And I think this will be quite fruitful for those who are in the process of contemplating renunciation.
Actually, there is one final question that we probably should have asked that we didn't, and that's for Karen. Did you make the right decision in renouncing, Karen? Do you have any regrets?
I have no regrets, John.
Not a single. Okay.
Now that I've retired, I just can't imagine how difficult
it would have been.
To comply with U.S. rules.
Yeah, the retirement, you know, it's the moving in, living off capital, and that where it becomes extremely problematic.
Yeah.
Extremely problematic. And the, you know, the whole last few years of the shutdown, there's a lot more people who are, you know, pushing covered expatriate status who need, I think, to get on with this, at least the thinking about it. So.
Absolutely. Well, good. Excellent.
All right, everybody. Have we probably confused everybody with this discussion?
Well, I think it'll be important to say, you know, John, you have your citizenshipsolutions.ca for people to go to see your writings. And for Karen is the fix the tax treaty on Facebook?
fixthetaxtreaty.org. It's got a lot of articles on there that could help people with Australian assets think about what the U.S. tax.
Absolutely. Right. I want to reinforce again that this is a very country-specific thing, okay?
Absolutely.
Because of the whole asset thing, right? So.
Yeah, and I'll just add, you know, there's American Expatriates on Facebook. And for those who are accidental Americans, there is an accidental American group as well. And then for us, there's SEAT.
Absolutely.
And that SEAT, forgive me, oh my God, I'm going to have a mind like
extraterritorial.
No, no, that part I got. Seatnow.org, if I'm not mistaken. That's what the website is.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you know, Keith, you put it that way. And you know what I just realized from listening to you talk?
What?
Actually, U.S. citizenship is a problem for everybody.
Okay.
It's true. You know, we talk about all these different groups of people.
Yeah. It is. But we're all linked individually and collectively to different things. And I thought it'd be good to get that out there. People to go to.
Oh, very, very definitely. Very, very definitely. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's time to sign off.
Signing off. All right. I'll put this podcast up in the next hour or two.
Okay. And you'll
You can send it out around the world, because believe it or not, there are people considering renouncing U.S. citizenship.
Absolutely. Get a lot of inquiries. Good.
Okay. Are we done, or does anybody want to? Okay. So thanks, Keith, for.
No, thank you. Have you stopped recording, or are we going to be on this part of the podcast?
No, I'm about to hit the stop record.
You'll hear. Okay.
Here we go.